Lose a bet, Senator Monroe.
Okay, everyone witness. Senator Monroe is now handing over $5 to...
bribing our staff.
Oh. Make sure that it's good. Take a good look at that $5 bill. Opening the Senate Committee on Finance and Revenue in very dry Oregon as compared to very wet Florida last night.
Yes.
So today we are continuing our focus on building Oregon's reserves. I think first we're going to hear from a few of our colleagues who have been working on this issue both this session and in previous sessions, and then we're going to move into a couple panels that I think have signed up. So with that, I will open a public hearing on SJR 3, SJR 5, SJR 7, SJR 8, and SB 48. And call up Senator Schrader, Senator Morse, and Senator Devlin. And then Senator Starr, you'll, if you're willing,
Representative Edwards.
We'll follow this panel.
Good morning.
Perfect.
Good morning.
May we start, Mr. Chair?
Please.
Thank you. Kurt Schrader, State Senator, District 20. Appreciate the opportunity to testify before the Finance and Revenue Committee here today. Think a lot of what you're going to hear is stuff you heard last session. It seems like there's renewed interest in the building, though, in actually accomplishing something. Everyone's on board, regardless of party, regardless of chamber. So that sounds pretty exciting. Just a function of fine-tuning the actual proposal. I'll talk about SJR 5 and SJR 8. SJR 5 should look very familiar to you. This is the simplest approach to make sure we get out of Dodge with something with regard to an adequate rainy day fund. It merely adjusts the current education stability fund from a 5% level to a 10% level of the general fund. So it's a very simple one-word change in the bill, just one little word, actually one number, changes in our reserve fund. So this is the simplest approach. I offer this to make sure that we actually get something done this session, and hope that we look at this favorably as a fallback position. I would actually prefer SJR 8 as an alternative. Because I think it's a little more thoughtful, it's a little more progressive, gets at building that fund in a more timely manner. SJR 5, of course, still allows the lottery to continue to build. Unfortunately, I think, as your revenue staff has indicated, the chance of another recession hitting before we get to 10% in the lottery revenues building is likely, so we will never get to that 10% level. SJR 8 gives you a different way to get there. It actually it also establishes a new rainy day fund at a 10% level in addition to the Education Stability Fund. It allows that fund to be filled primarily by diverting temporarily some of the personal and corporate kicker monies until that fund fills up to 10%, and then, of course, it preserves the integrity of the kicker law by allowing money after that 10% is filled to go back to the people that are paying the taxes to begin with. So the interest here that we've had over the interim in this has been pretty huge, pretty outstanding. Everyone seems to be afraid to talk about the personal kicker, and I think Senator Morris, yourself, Mr. Chair, and some of the others that have been working with us on this whole hopeful reform model have found, quite frankly, a general willingness by a lot of people to say, hey, yeah, you know, I want my money back, but if it means we could build it temporarily, at least a big rainy day fund, yeah, I'm fine with that, too. I think most Oregonians are actually a lot more thoughtful than some of the pollsters or some of us give them credit for. So SJR 8, as I said, is a simple bill also, just establishes new rainy day fund. The way you fill it is with corporate and personal kicker money till it gets to 10% of the general fund levels, and then that kicker would still then revert back to the populace at large. I think this is realistic, as you know, Mr. Chair, and that the kicker, personal and corporate, this time would fill that fund with one biennia, so we can fill it. And then the very next biennium, if there's money coming in, it would go back to the taxpayers, just like in the Constitution right now. So we think this is a good compromise, and would hope the committee and this body would entertain it in a positive manner. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for Senator Schrader. Senator Schrader, do you have any thoughts, since we have you here? Part of the thoughts have been taking some current revenue streams, and that's been a big topic of debate, whether it's ending fund balance, direct appropriation, taking a percentage of your most volatile income today or 05, 07, 09, and then in the future. But that obviously affects the world that you work with really closely because you're taking money off the table and putting it in reserve.
I thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, I strongly suggest we do that. I think for the integrity of the process and to help build, especially this legislative session, a decent fund that gets up there in the $800-900 million level, that we should set aside approximately 1% of our current revenues that are coming in here. I'd be willing to entertain that as a good fiscal measure for us here in Ways and Means, and again, would hope this body would look favorably upon that sort of thing.
Thank you. Other questions for Senator Schrader? Senator Monroe.
Well, I like his comment about changing just one little word. I remember several bills that just changed one little word, like shall to may or may to shall. Very little effect.
Senator Starr.
Thank you. Your SGR8 would be a referral, or it's constitutional revision, but it would require a referral to the voters as well, correct?
That's correct.
So the legislature votes two-thirds for constitutional revision, and then that would send it also to the voters for their stamp of approval.
Yeah, they'd have to get their blessing at the end of the day.
And you're convinced that the citizens, Mr. Chair,
please,
the citizens would vote to suspend the personal kicker as well as the corporate kicker?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Segues nicely to Senator Morse, who has some dated polling, but polling on that very question.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Colleagues, for the record, Frank Morse. I represent District 8, which is Corvallis, Albany, in the Senate. There seems to be a great reluctance to present to the voters an alternative to the current kicker that we have today. Senator Schrader mentioned the work that some of us have been doing in speaking around the state. I know in my own district to this issue of reforming or amending the kicker, and have found a very, very favorable audience. In my comments today, I think SGR 8 is an excellent piece of legislation that mirrors what we passed out of the Senate in 03, almost exactly. And it died in the House. But in preparation for that, in 03, we ran a statewide poll. And 71% of Oregonians, east, west, rural, urban, 71% of Oregonians said the kicker really doesn't make sense. So I think the reluctance to trust the wisdom of voters, we need to challenge that and be bold in what we present to the voters. Furthermore, specific to SJR 8, 62% of voters said they would approve that. Now, this was back in 03. I asked the exact same question that was in that poll in the fall of last year. And in my district, it mirrored almost exactly. 61% of the voters in my district said they would support amending the kicker. So my encouragement is that we think boldly and trust the voters and trust the wisdom of the voters in terms of recognizing what we need to do in this state to build a solid financial foundation. When this is mentioned to people outside the state of Oregon in terms of our lack of a stability fund, a general stability fund, people just stand and they scratch their head. They say, you have what? You don't? With the volatile revenue system that we have. So the challenge is, what can we present that would make sense? I would suggest to you that there is the potential for another alternative that combines a lot of the thinking that has been floating around. And I would call it a shared responsibility model to create a rainy day fund, and I trust you have this document to refer to.
Yeah.
And in this shared responsibility model, the taxpayers assumed responsibility to set aside into a rainy day fund a portion of their 2007 kicker refunds and a portion of future kicker refunds. And then also, in reference to the question you asked, Mr. Chair, with respect to current revenues, it would set aside a portion of current budgeted revenues as well into a rainy day fund. I believe this would involve three constitutional amendments. One is that we repeal the corporate kicker for 05-07, and there seems to be a fair amount of support for that. My recommendation would be, however, that we do not spend that on operations. Place it in a rainy day fund, or, and this is a little bit outside the box, consider the merits of using those funds to collateralize capital construction bonds, which would allow you to capture the absolute lowest bond cost and then invest the funds, in effect creating an arbitrage that would earn money for the state. And then the proceeds of that arbitrage would go into a rainy day fund. The second constitutional amendment would be to reform the personal kicker for 05 and 07. And looking at the data that has been supplied by legislative revenue in the distribution of kickers based on personal income tax brackets, if you decided to refer to the voters to where 75% of taxpayers would receive their full refund and 25% of the taxpayers with incomes in excess of $60,000 would receive a maximum kicker no greater than $800, that would generate, should generate, if I did the interpolation right, Paul, close to $500 million. And that would have to be tested. And then the third piece would be to reform the personal kicker for 07, 09, and beyond. And all three of these, by the way, referred for a May 07 election. And this then would mirror SJR 8 with the exception that, again, the thinking of a shared responsibility model where rather than when you have actual in excess of 1% instead of 100% of that going into a rainy day fund, 50% of it would go into a rainy day fund. So, again, thinking in terms of the shared responsibility until it equals 10% of the previous legislative approved budget. And then 100% of any amounts of revenue collected in excess would be returned to taxpayers. And the withdrawal from this, of course, would be the same as the Education Stability Fund. And then getting back to, again, the shared responsibility so that we can demonstrate to voters that, in fact, we do have discipline within this building, to require that the legislature budget 1% of each legislative approved budget for a rainy day fund. That would then be payable after the final biennium accounting and only if the actual revenue is greater than the forecasted revenue. So, in fact, you do have those funds available. And then withdrawal would be subject to the same terms as the Education Stability Fund. I briefly provided to you just several scenarios. And this I would ask that Paul and his staff would test to create the kind of scenarios, the what-ifs, and how this shared responsibility concept would apply. But there have been many, many ideas floating around the building, and I believe the shared responsibility model captures several of those concepts. I would like to make one comment with respect to whether or not we ask voters to amend the kicker, and it has to do with the growth in spending in this state. If you go back the last 16 years, and this is data provided by legislative revenue, if you go back the last 16 years, what you find is a rather sizable growth in general fund spending to the tune of about $7 billion. But of that, $3.4 billion, nearly 50%, was driven by what voters have asked us to do in directing these general fund discretionary dollars, which makes it exceedingly difficult to set aside large amounts out of current resources when you have this built-up unmet need. And we all feel that keenly in the building, particularly those of us on Ways and Means. So I believe the concept of more of a shared responsibility, where we ask voters to amend the kicker but not repeal it totally, and where we then, as a part of our budgeting process, as Senator Schrader has indicated support for, that we then, in fact, set aside a percent of our current revenues and put also into the rainy day fund. So that concludes my remarks, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Senator George.
Thanks. Senator Morris, I'm sitting here looking at the LFO's report on the kicker, and during a period of time the kicker's been in existence, we've actually received in the general fund $101,325,000,000 if we hit the right keys, and I think we did because it looks like the right number. But out of that $101 billion, we've only given back into the kicker $3 billion. And, Paul, is that pretty close?
That's
okay,
correct.
We just took your average.
3%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. About $3 billion has gone back out of $101 billion the taxpayers have sent in here. It's going to be pretty hard to justify that to the public, that we're going to go out and take your money when it represents such a small percentage of the amount that we have spent. And you're absolutely right. When I look at these numbers, growing from $2.9 billion to $12.6 billion. And the people keep asking me, well, what are you buying? Are you getting efficiency first? You know, because there's three ways you get money in the building. You all know this. You either raise taxes, which is what this is doing, that you either stop wasting the money or you grow the economy. Okay, our economy is growing. But the main thing we haven't really focused on, and I know you have an interest in that, is in finding the efficiencies. We know they're there. We know we're middle management top-heavy. I just feel real bad going out and asking the people to do this with these kind of growth numbers and the kicker being such a minute amount, because it obviously is a tax increase. You got a response to that?
Well, I do, Mr. Chairman, Senator George. This concept of shared responsibility, I think, needs to fall back to the voters. A great deal of this is, you know, as I mentioned, nearly 50% of that growth in general fund spending is what voters have told us to do. So in the sense that when you have unanticipated revenue, and there is no economist in the world that could tell you they could forecast accurately to 2% or less than 2% in the system that we have. So the combination of where we find ourselves today with what the initiative process has driven, and I agree with you, you know, our spending, there's no good to the end we can do, just give us more money. You know, that exists. There has to be discipline. And but notwithstanding that, I think asking voters if they would be willing to set aside these unanticipated revenues into a lockbox that said will be used to fund our schools, to keep kids in school, to fund critical services, public safety, I think is a reasonable request to voters to see if they want to share in that responsibility.
Senator George.
Frank, I remember your poll, and one of the questions I asked back then is, did you test for a negative campaign? Did you test if you heard this, would this affect your vote? And the answer would be, of course, yes, it would. I can just see a campaign against this. If this is one more time when they're not listening to the people, we told you guys that we want the kicker. And, you know, if you remember when we've referred things out to the people, like, for example, death with dignity, and they pounded us for that, and we voted out a gas tax that went down 88% no, and I can just really see a campaign coming. Are you afraid that you're going to get a rejection on this thing, and it'll be one more black mark on the legislature for not listening to the people?
Please.
Mr. Chair, Senator George, it may be that a process that we've set in motion to look at comprehensively at how we spend money, how we save money, how we budget it, and how we raise it. We're anticipating a very, very thoughtful focus group testing concept. And what we have in mind is have five focus groups, one in the Portland area, Mid-Valley, the Coast, Southern Oregon, and Eastern Oregon, to discuss this issue in particular, in addition to other issues around our fiscal affairs, and we will have this on an accelerated timetable, we may find some things out of that that may help us as a body to come to conclusions about where this needs to go. So, my whole role in this whole legislative process has been one of, from the very beginning, of needing to address this kicker that we need to ask voters for their approval to reform it. I don't think necessarily repealing it is right, because it does put a dampener on the growth of government. But I've spoken to this issue around the state. I've spoken dozens and dozens of times in my own district, and it resonates with voters. So whether it would be defeated or approved, I think it's up to the voters. It's not us. And if it is defeated, then we've done our job in presenting to them that alternative.
Mr. Chair, I may also make a comment. Senator George raises some interesting points, ones that we've grappled with. And I think the comment about what about the spending patterns and the efficiencies, that's a good thing to bring up. And this legislative session and last legislative session, we've made a huge inroad in the Ways and Means process to address that. We're becoming a performance-based budgeting state now. This session, we're holding an even higher standard. We're acquiring continuous improvement concepts before a budget could even be heard. The package of bills that the Chair, Senator Morris, myself, Senator Westland, numerous representatives, Republicans in the House, are very interested in a package. And I think that's part of what we're talking about here. This is part of the solution. Rainy Day Fund doesn't buy us, you know, tranquility or nirvana. It gives us a little bit of a cushion when things get bad again. We still need to revise our revenue ability, how we get our revenue in the state. We still need to revise how we spend money in the state, and we need to revise how we budget money in the state. And the package of Rainy Day Fund with those other three elements is critical, I think, to regaining the hope and trust of the people. And I think if you package it together like this, I think you get a resounding yes vote. The other point you made was that, you know, the will of the people and all that. Well, frankly, number one is, in my humble opinion, not a tax increase. Obviously, they're getting money back after they've already paid the taxes, so it's not an increase. They're actually getting money back. Secondly, this doesn't repeal the kicker. What it would do is merely question to the voters is, hey, do you want to divert some of this to another one of your big priorities, establishing a rainy day fund? We've heard clearly from them this is something they want. So this doesn't repeal it. It just diverts some of the money temporarily, not into programs. Another point that you made, it's not into more programs that we think we need to do to make people feel good. And last but not least, to getting blasted because we told you so, how many times we have to tell you, I just remind Mr. Chair, Senator George and the committee, that in 2001 we put out an education stability fund that got rejected at that time significantly. In 2002 we put the exact same proposal out in a past. So I think the people are willing to be educated. We've seen that this last election cycle astonished me, and I think people across the state of Oregon, when the great voters of this state rejected two outlandish, draconian spending reduction proposals that easily could have been sold, as you point out, with a big negative campaign, and the voters crushed both of those. They are desperate for hopeful reform. They are desperate for big picture thinking, and this is the time to give it to them and let them decide what they want to do.
Can you just comment briefly just in terms of the spending, because that obviously plays so heavily into this debate. Where are we spending? Is the spending growth occurring in the areas education, higher education, community colleges, health care? I know you spend a decent part of your day looking at that, and that obviously is so germane to whether you use some of your excess or your kicker revenue to.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, yes, I guess I would point out a couple things. One is that in the short-term discussion about the 20% increase in revenues in this last two-year period, people conveniently forget that we lost 20% of our general fund, you know, about 6 years ago. So by my way of simple back-of-the-envelope thinking, we're about even. Adjusted for inflation and such. I think another huge point that people need to realize is the impact the initiative system has had on our budgeting. If you adjust our spending since 1991, for inflation and the initiative process, where the initiatives required us to spend a lot of money for local schools that we didn't used to do, the prison building, and a number of other things, we actually are spending less per capita than we did 15 years ago. Less. And I'd be glad to get the committee the chart. Anyone who doesn't believe that, I'd be glad to show them the chart. So we're not profligate spenders, contrary to popular opinion. I would also point out, as the chair has alluded to, that 95% of the money we spend in this state, historically, probably this coming session too, goes to three areas: education, healthcare, human services, and public safety. I dare say those are the priorities of the people of the state of Oregon. When I hear them again and again, I don't care if you're a Democrat, don't care if you're Republican or independent. Those are the priorities, and we spend our money there. I also, because of the draconian cuts over the last 6 years that this legislative assembly made, and I think you all deserve a lot of credit for making very difficult decisions. Matter of fact, it's one thing that's helped our bond rating, is Wall Street recognizes that this state, compared to California and many other states, made some tough choices. But as a result of that, we have a tough time because things need to be coming back. And a lot of our colleagues are very nervous about rampant spending or setting a whole bunch of our current revenues aside. We have desperate needs. We're one of the lowest, 48th in the nation, in higher education spending. Our K-12 spending's desperately low. I mean, we're still one of the poorest states in terms of school years. And our healthcare system, we still have seniors that we removed from nursing homes and assisted living facilities in the depths of the recession that still have not access to those facilities. We have a lot of serious needs. So as Senator Morris has pointed out, the chair I think has alluded to, we have to balance, you know, the real needs, basic needs of Oregonians with setting up a thoughtful reserve fund that doesn't bankrupt us in the near term.
The bleeding heart of the legislature from Camby. Senator Monroe.
Thank you. I've thought a lot about the kicker law over the last 20, 25 years. It's the only law of its type in the nation. Every economist I've ever talked to tells me that it's really a dumb law, but it's the law. The voters approved it and put it in the Constitution. A lot of people have a misunderstanding about the kicker. They think kicker happens when we overtax them, and that's absolutely not true. The kicker happens when we underestimate how much our tax rates are going to drive. And being prudent, underestimating is better than overestimating. Because when you overestimate, then you have multiple special sessions and have to come back and cut programs where you've made promises to school districts and to universities and so on, and then you have to say, no, we're not going to keep that promise. We've got to cut back on what we take and give you. So, you know, to Senator Morris, I am really impressed with this piece of work. I think it sets a solid framework, and I think it can be sold to the voters. What does it say? It says that those people that are in low and middle income taxpayers get their kicker. Only the top income people have their kicker limited. They still get $800 back. It has their kicker limited, the rest put into a rainy day fund. It requires the state to contribute to a rainy day fund every time the revenues come in that are anticipated. Only when it drops below what's anticipated would we not contribute in that year to the rainy day fund. I'm just really impressed with this. I think it's a sound framework for us to work on in this revenue committee. And, Mr. Chair, I'm thrilled to get into it. Senator Morse, you've done the electorate of this state a real service in preparing this for us.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, colleagues, may I just dovetail into what Senator Schrader was saying in response to your question. The pressure is so great in terms of the unmet need. If you took K through 12 and higher ed in this state and said, based on inflation and growth in students, what would it take in the 05-07 budget to just be water level equal to where we were in 91, it's $600 million. That's what it would take to be current. Just population of students and inflation adjusted, it's $600 million. Those are tremendous pressures on us to meet needs. And so it becomes very, very difficult to take very many dollars out of current revenues. But I think we need to demonstrate that we can take some.
Senator Burdick.
Thank you. I also wanted to commend you for this proposal because, to me, it's all about honesty and integrity in our process. We, by heavily relying on the income tax, we have the most volatile of all possible funding mechanisms for our state. And we have children out there in third grade who really can't wait for a recession to continue, to end, to continue their education. So to me, there's two ways to go about it. You can reform the tax structure and have a more stable funding mechanism, which would involve a sales tax, or you can work with the system we have. In order to be honest and have integrity, our kicker system would have to have a reverse kicker during recessions. In other words, to be completely intellectually honest, when if you're going to return money to taxpayers when revenues are higher than forecasted, then if revenues fall lower than forecasted, you need to tax taxpayers. Well, anyone can agree that the worst time to raise taxes is during a recession. So this is a way of restoring integrity to our process and evening it out, given the tax system we have, which is it's full of flaws. This actually takes a very flawed funding system and makes it work. And unless you're willing to take that step, you're just condemning yourself to what the nightmare we went through in 2002 when we had to cut our budget by 20%. And when you're in serious need of the services, public safety, social services, education, Senator Schrader's right, that's 95% of our budget. Which of those are you willing to do without? It was one of the most horrible experiences I've had as a legislator, having to make all those cuts. So I commend you for coming in with a proposal that is very reasonable, keeps faith with the voters in putting the kicker in the Constitution, and helps to stabilize our system. So thank you very much.
Thank you. I'm going to let Senator Schrader and Senator Morse go.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So that Senator Starr is not up there by himself, hand it off to Senator Devlin for our third presentation, another adherent to the hopeful reform effort.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This morning, I think everyone sees that it's not by accident that the first three people to testify have been on Ways and Means for quite a long time. I think it's pretty clear that those of us that are in that committee and having to deal with making cuts, even in this time where people think that our income is flush at the state level, it's rather indicative of how important we believe this issue is. I think everyone that's here recognizes the need for a stability fund, and the first thing I'd like to say about that is that's why we have one. That's often misunderstood. I saw so many candidates in the last election run on the basis that we needed a rainy day fund or a stability fund. And as everyone here on the Revenue Committee knows, we have one. Now, everyone would probably agree it's inadequate. But then I think we should talk a little bit about what the purpose of a rainy day fund is. Is the purpose to avoid all cuts during a recession? No. That's not really possible, and I'll tell you why. In 2001, already been alluded to, we lost about 21% of our general fund lottery fund discretionary revenue. That was about $2 billion. That was the worst downturn in state revenue since 1935. But in 2001, we actually had a rainy day fund, not an official one, but an unofficial one. We had over $400 million in tobacco settlement funds that would accrue during that time, during the previous biennium and that biennium. Plus, we mortgaged about $450 million additional of the tobacco settlement in order to get through the biennium. In 2011, if we had the same type of loss, which we do not anticipate, remember that the 2001 was the worst that we had since 1935. But if we had a similar loss in revenue, we wouldn't be talking about a $2 billion loss. We would be talking about close to a $4 billion loss. Therefore, no plan that has been put forward to you today could actually cover that kind of a loss. So if people would anticipate that somehow by creating a rainy day fund that you wouldn't have to make cuts, that's an entirely a false assumption. Also, there is no guarantee that in any recession that it would only last one biennium. But so I think that there's importance here to actually improve the existing stability fund we have, or even to create a separate one. A lot of discussion has gone about keeping the corporate kicker either on a one-time or permanent basis. I think that's a worthwhile discussion, and I think that particularly the one-time would immediately bolster our existing stability fund, and keeping it permanently, although it would not actually give us anything guaranteed, it would probably from time to time improve that stability fund. There's also been discussion of unappropriated balance. I think pretty clearly it should be possible for us to keep 1% of our general fund unappropriated. And I think actually the unappropriated then becomes part of the ending fund balance in the end. And I think we could actually say that we'll keep 1% unappropriated and keep 50% of what is an additional to that that is unspent. That might generate between the 1% and keeping 50% could easily generate between 200 and 250 million a biennium. SDR 7 is rather simple. And it's very doable. It only involves one constitutional amendment, not a constitutional revision. It merely increases the percentage of lottery revenue dedicated to the fund. I'd like to run very quickly through some models here to tell you just basically what will happen with the existing fund and what would happen under this. If we kept the existing school stability fund with all of its current restrictions at 18%, it would rise from $452 million at the end of the 07 biennium to $975 million at the end of the 2011 biennium. At that time, 5% would equal $875 million, and that would divert $100 million off into the school capital matching subaccount. However, if we took that 18% and we added in the corporate kicker, that fund would reach $727 million at the end of this biennium, would kick off $27 million to the school stability fund. It would again only, it would rise to $975 then in the 2009 biennium, but the 5% would be $775 million. So that would kick off $200 million to the school capital account, and it would rise to $1,050 in the 2011 biennium. Notice that I'm backing out the money that goes into the school stability fund. But the 5% would only be $875 at that time, and you'd kick out another $175 million if you follow the current law and if you put the corporate kicker into the school stability fund. However, if you modified it like under SJR 7, which is actually a modification that modifies it from 18% in this biennium to 20% in the next biennium and 22% in the following biennium. It doesn't kick out money to the school capital matching subaccount until the end of the 2011 biennium, but at that time the 7% equals $1.225 billion, and this assumes that you put that corporate kicker into that and you kick out $114 million into that account. If you change those percentages even higher from 18, 21 to 24, you end up still at 1.225 as your 7% figure at the end of the 2011 biennium, but you kick out $158 million into the school capital matching subaccount. The reality of this is it's very doable, and it relies on simply one constitutional change that if we're ever going to increase the school stability fund, we probably need to address that because we'll get to the 5% one way or the other. And while it is very beneficial to probably to an important use that we all know about, and that is the capital needs of our public schools, an $875 million education stability fund at the end of the 2011 biennium would be relatively inadequate. One of the benefits of this, too, is it retains existing triggers. It retains the existing dedication of earnings. One thing I want to say about the dedication of earnings, and I would hope that the chair would look into this, is the dedication of earnings is not much of an issue when we have about $200 million in the account. But when we have $1 billion in the account, the dedication of earnings is going to be a relatively significant issue in terms of how they're diverted and what impact that that has, knowing now that they're diverted towards, I believe, debt reduction and student assistance. SGR 7 is simple. It's straightforward, dedication of revenue. One of my pet peeves about stability funds and rainy day funds is everyone wants to do one with revenue that they don't have to make a choice on. They want to do it with a future kicker, which I think is a good idea in terms of the corporate, because I do think that the corporate kicker makes absolutely no sense at all. But they don't want to actually take it out of their pocket that they're going to spend this biennium or a future biennium. And I think, honestly, if you're going to create a stability fund, you need to have some degree of sacrifice. You're trying to avoid severe pain in the future, so you should be willing to put some money away today. And that's why I think you need to do a combination of these, of increasing the percentage from the lottery fund, which is taking money away that you would have had to. It's clearly our most reliable funding source, as we all kind of regret. Doing the 1%, reserving 1%, which is taking money away, and actually dedicating a portion of the additional beginning fund balance or ending fund balance at the end of the biennium. And I think all those things combined will get you a pretty reasonable rainy day fund, and something that I think could allow us to go through a normal type of recession without too severe a cut. But no one should ever expect that we could go through another 2001 without having to face severe pain.
Thank you. And thank you for all the work. You've worked long and hard on different concepts to bolstering our reserves. Questions for Senator Devlin?
Yeah.
Senator Monroe.
Yeah, could you comment on Senator Morse's proposal? Have you reviewed
it? As I'm well known for being an optimist, the chair is looking at me sarcastically. A constitutional revision requires a two-thirds vote. When you can tell me you can deliver 40 and 20, I will be more optimistic. I would also tell you that in 2003, the voters had no perception that they would have $1 billion coming back to them. Now I think that perception is relatively clear, that they know that they have $1 billion coming back to them. I would like to look at some current polling before I ever put anything out this door. And I actually don't believe that I don't believe that you could get the 20 and 40 in this current legislature.
We did pass something Senator Monroe very similar two sessions ago to that, the concept that you have before you, like about 3 years ago. Senator George.
Senator, could you get these numbers for us that you just ran through? I was going as fast as I could, and I think I missed some. So if you
could summarize that. And they are actually, this is not LRO's analysis. It's based on the December forecast. But I could actually just talk to Paul, and he could check my numbers and get them to you in a more readable format than what I have.
Thank you. Senator Bruce Starr.
Thank you. For the record, it's Bruce Starr, State Senator from District 15, Western Washington County. I appreciate, Mr. Chair, your allowing me to testify. Representative Edwards had to slip out to another appointment, but Representative Edwards and I have an SJR that has been dropped. It should be first read today. We don't have it a number, so I appreciate you allowing me to testify. I provided you all a graph that basically outlines what Representative Edwards and my plan is. It's very similar to an SJR that I introduced 2 years ago, and I agree with my good friend Senator Devlin about forced discipline, about pain, about requiring money that you can spend today that you have to put away. And let me first just go through what our plan is. Our plan is basically 3%. You take 3% of the money that you have to spend and you put it in the rainy day fund. Every session. The graph that you have would demonstrate what that would mean to the state budgeting, what it would mean to our state if we had had it in 2002. The two levels are the two graphs that you have. One on the top shows that if you just had a 3% and you went into the recession and you dipped into the rainy day fund and spent it, you could maintain your spending in 2001, 2003, but look what happens in 2003, 2005. You get a big hit. So the measure that Representative Edwards and I put forward would require that the legislature could only spend two-thirds of the rainy day fund in any one biennium. And you'll see in the graph what that means to your spending line as it relates to 05 or 03, 05. You're able to maintain a level of spending without a precipitous drop. What you have here is a savings plan that accounts for our revenue system. It's really simple. Requires a constitutional change. And that wouldn't require a constitutional change necessarily if the legislature were disciplined. But I've been around this process long enough to know that the legislature's not disciplined. Why is the kicker in the Constitution? The kicker's in the Constitution because the legislature has one word that they can put in front of any statute, notwithstanding, and get around it. And so that's why the kicker's in the Constitution. From my perspective, there's a couple of things that a rainy day fund has to be coming out of this process. It doesn't have to look exactly like this. Senator Devlin's plan is one that would be, as it relates to modifying the Education Stability Fund, from my perspective, would get us there. If you increase the amount of money that went into the Education Stability Fund, not to 22%, but something closer to 35%, and then blew the cap up a bit, you could manage it that way. But it has to be forced discipline. It has to be something that's regular. It has to be something that's not able to be manipulated by legislators in this building. And I would suggest that the kicker whole personal side is a fool's errand. Oregon voters are not going to change the way that you deal with the kicker on the personal side. I'm sorry to say that, but I absolutely believe that. And I think it's crazy for this legislature to refer a measure to the people to modify the personal kicker. I don't think that Oregon voters are going to trust us to take their personal kicker. And I think Senator George is correct when you talk about the polling as it has it tested for that negative campaign. This is something that's simple. It's easy. It's something that Oregonians would understand. We've done polling on this that shows this polls in the high 70s. Oregonians understand savings. They understand what happens when a recession hits this state. My constituents, as you heard the other day, saw firsthand what it means to have 17 days of school chopped off at the end of the school year. This would have prevented that from happening if we'd had this kind of system in place. So my main points, it needs to be constitutional, it needs to be regular, it needs not to be something that legislators can manipulate. I think the two-thirds withdrawal is critically important. Our measure does not have a particular cap. You know, we could put a 10% cap on, but I would argue that it's not really necessary because you're going to hit that recession and you're going to dip into it. So whether you have a cap, if that's what the majority wants in order to buy off on a plan like this, that's fine. I don't necessarily think it's necessary. I'd also just take issue with the fact that we have this volatile tax system. If you look at the graph, it's volatile. Yeah, it goes up and up and up and up and up until you hit a recession, and then it goes down. And I would suggest that if you had a sales tax is not recession-proof. If you go to a sales tax, you're still going to have a dip. It's still going to go down. So a sales tax isn't the answer. It's not the nirvana. It's not going to solve all of Oregon's fiscal problems. I would suggest that the income tax is something that is representative of our economy. Oregonians understand that they make money, they pay taxes on it. And I'm frustrated by this thing that our tax system is volatile. Yeah, it goes up all the time until it goes down. And if you had a rainy day fund, you would take care of those problems. And a sales tax isn't the answer because it goes down in a recession as well. Otherwise, you know, states with sales taxes, which is virtually all the states in the nation, would have been cruising during this last recession, but we all know that wasn't the case. So that's in a nutshell what I'm here to offer the SGR that Representative Edwards and I have will be first read hopefully later this morning. We can enter into this conversation. I think that that there's a lot of commonality that you've heard in your testimony this morning. Forced savings is something that I've heard from virtually all of my colleagues. But I would just suggest that going to the personal kicker, particularly, is a place that we should be very cautious about moving toward. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Questions for Senator Monroe?
Yeah, Senator Starr, you talked about the personal kicker, but I didn't hear you talk about the corporate kicker. Is this something that should be, this $275 million should be put into the rainy day fund as we create it and expand it?
I think that the voters would, I don't think the voters are clamoring for their corporate kicker. I don't think that you'd get crossways with Oregonians if the legislature were to appropriate the corporate kicker into a rainy day fund or, as Senator Morse suggested, into a one-time capital expenditures. I think it would be foolish for us to spend it on ongoing budgetary items, but I don't think you get crossways with the voters that way. But the personal kicker is the place that I think it's a fool's errand, in my opinion.
Okay, well, I appreciate your comments. I especially appreciate your comments about our tax structure, because for better or for worse, I think we're stuck with it. I tell people that ask me, when are we going to get a sales tax? I say, probably not in my lifetime. And I don't know how long that is, but so you're probably right there, although people still talk about it. But you recognize, of course, that an income tax-based system is more volatile than a sales tax-based system. The ups are faster and the downs are faster, and it makes it really critical that we create a substantial rainy day fund.
Absolutely.
From savings, so to take some of that volatility out.
And I think that's my point. It's not that we don't have a volatile system. It's just that all systems are volatile. And if you had a reserve, that takes the, you know, you're able to smooth out the ups and downs, clearly.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
One other question. Senator Starr, and they didn't do it in graphical form, but Senator Morrison, I'm very familiar with these graphs. I think they would argue, well, I know they would, and Senator Schrader, that it is not the legislature that has been, if you look at the discretionary spending, we haven't been profligate spenders. We've made relatively minor, and if you look by percentage, actually very minor increases. And other than the initiative process, which has driven some increases, the legislature in and of itself has not been that, which I think certainly is represented in public opinion that we're spending. But it's definitely part of your plan. I think the assumption is that we would spend, and we will spend above and beyond, especially in those discretionary areas, what we have. And I don't know if you would want to comment on that.
Well, clearly the legislature's had to react and respond to the will of the voters. And as legislators, I think we're foolish to second guess the voters. And, you know, the voters have decided through the initiative process they want certain things done, and the legislature has responded to those. In my perspective, that's irrelevant to the discussion today. And I know a lot of people want to, you know, bring the whole discussion together. What I'm talking about is creating a not a spending plan, but a savings plan. How we spend the 97%, we can have that debate in ways and means, and in this process, that's what we do. I suggest we take 3% and save it and put it aside. And, and the voters have the opportunity through the initiative process to change our state's constitution and force the legislature to do this or that or something else constitutionally and statutorily. And it's up to us to respond and react. And that's kind of the system that we're in. We can not like it, but we still have to respect the fact that we do have a system that allows the citizens of the state of Oregon to, you know, basically tell us what to do. And I think it's our responsibility to follow through and take their wisdom and enact it into policy.
Senator Devlin.
Mr. Chairman, I did want to comment on one question that you asked Senator Schrader about drivers in the budget. I've often made this comment that there are three 800-pound gorillas in the budget. In education, it's K through 12. In public safety, it's corrections. And in human services, it's health care. In terms of broad budget drivers, PERS is actually only in terms of increase as a budget driver now in the education budget, not as much so in state government. But the biggest driver across the board is the increased cost of health care. That is the biggest single driver in the budget. I don't have an exact figure for you, but to give you an idea, on the K through 12 side, it's approximately $180 million in increases just on the K through 12 side for this biennium. My guess is it probably at least equivalent to that in our other budgets combined.
Good point. Very good point. Thank you. Thank you very much. Paul, have we handed out the amendments that were drafted over?
I don't believe,
yeah. Okay, so council's been working over the weekend. We should make those public. Two amendments to SJR 3 and SJR 8 for members of the committee and for anyone else that might be interested. They are the other amendments that we may return to.
Maybe more copies. We need more copies.
We will make those public and get those to members of the committee. They are just another route to reserve funds, but I know folks in here have been wanting to see amendments, and so those would be them. Okay. Jim Craven, Duncan Wise, then Featherston.
Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Ben Featherston. I live here in Salem. I'm a lawyer in private practice. I'm here today in my capacity as chairman of Associated Oregon Industries. And we've been working very hard with other groups and other business representatives to present a united business position on this issue of fiscal reform. And I'm here to tell you that we want to strongly encourage a bipartisan solution. I think that there's general consensus that a reserve fund is necessary. There's also general consensus that it ought to be constitutional and that there ought to be some firewalls or triggers. There's also general agreement that there should be an ongoing source of funding for a reserve fund. And we're in agreement that for this session, there should be a one-time diversion of the corporate kicker to get that reserve fund started. We understand that there are a lot of details to be addressed, but I think that we're all in agreement on those general concepts. We also understand that the governor is going to put together a task force or a working group to start focusing on some of those details, and we're prepared to work with the governor on that. It's my view that this session can and should look at establishing a foundation, a beginning point, for ultimately addressing the long-term issues, the big-picture issues on overall fiscal policy reform. And we think that this is a good beginning to accomplish that goal.
Thank you. We'll go through the panel and then questions if that's Mr. Craven.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Jim Craven, representing the American Electronics Association, Oregon Council. AEA is the nation's largest high-tech trade association, and we've been engaged in these discussions in this room and others for since about 1982, and sometimes I think here in Room A is my home away from home. I really don't have a lot to add to what Mr. Featherston said. I think he's very specific in the groups of business associations that we've been trying to work together with members. We really do applaud the early effort of this body to address this critical need. It doesn't mean it's the only thing we need to address. There's lots of issues about long-term tax restructuring that will go on. But one of my favorite phrases is not letting the perfect be the enemy of the good. And I think we could take on the reserve fund as an issue into itself. And obviously in this building, everything gets linked to everything else, and that's part of the nature of politics. But we've been glad to see that this committee is working on the issue, that the minority leader in the House last week had some ideas along the same lines. And so we do really hope at the end of the day that this is a bipartisan effort that comes out of this building. It's not only the right thing to do to build up our reserves, but I think it does send a good signal to the voters about fiscal prudence in this body, and will be well received by the voters of Oregon. So we're here to help. We look forward to the next few days in this body as we see the more specifics of an actual plan that we can then go talk to our members with, our members, and talk to your members, and see where we can go from there. So thank you.
Thank you. Duncan.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Duncan Wise. I'm president of the Oregon Business Council. I want to thank the chair in particular for providing this leadership on bringing the Rainy Day Reserve Fund in front of the legislature this early in the session. This, as I think you all know, there's universal agreement that we need to do this. At the same time, I recall sessions with our public finance task force that Paul led over a decade ago, and we reached the conclusion then that we needed a reserve fund, and we set it session after session, and when we got to the recession, it didn't happen. We advocated for a reserve fund last time, and this body passed one, but it ultimately did not pass. So while we have a variety of recommendations on public finance, on budget reform, compensation reform, and the larger issues of tax reform, when you heard Malia Wasson speak before the summit this year, her number one priority was do the reserve fund, get it done. And we understand that while it seems like a simple idea, the details are tough to come by, and it's really, really important that this legislature not adjourn without a sizable increase in the stability fund. Why do we care about this in the business community? Well, first of all, we shared your pain. We saw what happened in the last recession, and it was painful as a community in Oregon. It also has very practical and really devastating implications for the business and the economy when you have the kind of volatility and the kind of budget cuts that we experienced. When we have shortened school days advertised in Doonesbury, our companies have a much tougher time recruiting and retaining talent here in Oregon because parents, those employees are parents, and they want good education for their kids. When the community colleges cut back on their training programs, our companies have to locate their plants elsewhere because they don't have the qualified workers, and that undermines the economy. And when higher ed cuts back, then we lose some of the innovation and R&D resources that we would otherwise have to drive the innovation economy. And when Oregonians lose access to health care, the health care needs don't go away. Those folks end up in the emergency room, and for the business community, that results in a cost shift and higher health care costs in terms of insurance rates. So the volatility of the system and the cuts we experience have implications on the economy, which is not good for the long-term health of Oregon and its economy. So we care about this issue, and we really do applaud you for taking this on, and we want to work with you in terms of getting a result this session. I think the commitment you heard from Ben earlier, it's a commitment that we're so serious about that you just heard Ben say that willing to do a one-time diversion of the corporate kicker. I don't think you should take that lightly. And what we want is a stable source of permanent funding for a reserve fund that will drive the reserve fund up to roughly 10% of the general fund budget. That should be the goal, and we're eager to work with you on getting that result done. Thank you.
Thank you. I don't know if Tim Boyle's a member of OBC. I remember coming across him and him mentioning just the difficulty in recruiting. He had two specific positions that he was mentioning that were important to Columbia, sportswear, and it was his reference was the cuts that were being made to K-12 and just the general feeling, at least in this case, nationally, that we were going in the wrong direction. And I think he linked that to a reserve fund. So
Seems Mr. Chair, this—it's not a unique story. This—I mean, I hear this all the time. I'm sure Jim hears it from his members. It's a real problem.
Senator Monroe.
Yes. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate the business community, you know, getting up to the table and involving themselves in the decisions here. I've been thinking about this for 20 years since I was sitting there. 20 years ago, and the issue was a rainy day fund, and the Senate passed it overwhelmingly, and to your comments, the Speaker of the House at that time, a Democrat, killed it because she wanted to do overall tax reform. She basically wanted a sales tax, and she saw this as tinkering with to fix the current system, and she didn't want the current system to work so that the people would throw it out and replace it. So what you said about the perfect versus the good really resonates with me. It's too bad we didn't get it done 20 years ago, but it's still here, and we still need to get it done, and it's more critical now. So I appreciate you stepping to the table. My question is, you talk about one-time corporate kicker, but not permanently diverting corporate kicker, any future corporate kicker monies into the rainy day fund, along with a constitutionally set piece of the general fund dedicated to build that fund over time. It seems to me that I can understand where you would be critical if the proposal was just to divert all future corporate kicker monies. But if the proposal is to constitutionally say this legislature will be prudent and will invest a certain portion of general fund money as well as lottery money and any future corporate kicker money to make sure that we can build this rainy day fund to 10%. That seems reasonable to me. If it's a good idea economically to take the corporate kicker money that's in front of us now, it seems like it ought to be a good idea in the future as well, especially given the economists that came before us last week and that said that the corporate kicker was the worst possible way from the standpoint of Oregon's economy, the worst possible way to spend that money. Somebody want to comment on that?
Okay. I'd be happy to, Mr. Chairman, Senator Monroe. In our view, the corporate kicker is a part of, just like the personal kicker, it's part of the existing revenue and spending policy, the fiscal policy for the state. And in effect, I think many voters view it as a spending cap, and it effectively operates as a spending cap. We think that an examination of the long-term implications of the kicker and the place for a kicker or a kicker-like mechanism is something that should come up and should be discussed in the context of a long-term, big-picture, overall discussion of fiscal policy generally, and that's both tax policy and spending policy. And we think that that's the context that a permanent repeal of the corporate kicker or the personal kicker or both should take place in. What we see is that during this session, a significant step forward can be made by establishing a reserve fund, and a reserve fund that voters have confidence in, that the business community has confidence in, that Wall Street has confidence in. We think that once that reserve fund is established, that does then provide a foundation for the continuing discussion of long-term overall fiscal policy reform, because in any event, a reserve fund is going to be a piece of the picture for fiscal policy in this state. And that's why we're not prepared to say that a permanent repeal of the corporate kicker is good policy. We're prepared to say that a reserve fund is good policy, that a one-time diversion to get that fund started is good policy, but we want to see that a permanent repeal discussion takes place in a larger, broader context.
So,
please,
see if I'm following you. So you're not closing the door on that at some future date, some future time, if it's a part of the overall discussion?
I think that our primary interest in general terms is on fiscal policy reform, and that's reforming both taxing and spending to make the state of Oregon better.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your time. Jim, you spent a lot of time here. Mr. Featherston, I know we're taking you away from your law practice. I've seen you in many meetings, and so the state of Oregon thanks you for all the time you're devoting to us and not to your clients. Thank you. That's right. Thank you, Duncan Wise, also. Let's go. Greg Hammond, president of Clatsop Community College, and Lynn Lundquist, do you want to, if you're here, do you want to come up and share the results of your survey of OBA members following the president?
Chairman Deckard and members of the committee, for the record, I'm Greg Hayman. I'm the president of Clatsop Community College. And I want to thank you for giving me the time to share with you how we at Clatsop Community College approach fiscal planning and how your state fiscal policy and practices affect our ability to achieve our desired outcomes. This is why this conversation is so important to us. One of my favorite authors, Eugene Peterson, once wrote a book entitled A Long Obedience in the Same Direction. The point of the book and the meaning of the title was that anything that is important to us seldom happens as a result of a single action or a single decision. Instead, the really big goals, the really big objectives come to us by a consistent pattern of decisions and actions over a long period of time. What is true in our personal life is also true in our the life of our public institutions. Achieving our most important goals and objectives require a sustained effort and institutional planning that goes beyond 1 year, even beyond one biennium, and the need for stable, reliable resources necessary to see those plans through to fruition. It's interesting that one of the anomalies of community college education, perhaps of many of the services and opportunities that you provide the citizens of the state, is that we need them most when we're least capable to pay for them. There's an inverse relationship. Whether we're talking about the consumer's ability to pay for these services or the state's ability to pay for these services, the coffers are often most empty when the need is greatest. At Clatsop Community College, one of the ways in which we have worked to mitigate this problem is by establishing our own reserve fund. Although that's easily enough said, it's difficult to put into practice. And we have certainly found that it requires not just revenues, but it requires sound policy and something you've been talking about, discipline. I'd like to talk a little bit about what we've done because it has begun to work for us, but I also think it has application to the kinds of conversations you're having. And in fact, many of the things that I'd like to talk about have already been referenced to in some ways by Senator Schrader, Morris, Devlin, and Starr, and I appreciate those. First of all, we decided to set a target, and we set a target at 15% of our operating revenues. We think that that is a good, modest beginning. We had operated for years without a reserve fund and suffered the instabilities associated with that. We provided budgeted an annual part of our operating budget, just as many of you have discussed. We set it at 1%, surprisingly, like you have discussed. That was about $100,000 for us. Fortunately, because we're good conservative fiscal planners and some good luck on our part, we were able to actually achieve our reserve balance within 3 years, and we were grateful to be able to do that. But it took a lot of discipline because, as you know, everything that you spend, everything that you put into a reserve is something you can't do something else with. In a sense, a savings account is an expenditure. And as I think Senator Schrader had indicated, any sort of tax rebate is an expenditure as well. And we call it at our institution financial aid, but it has the corresponding to a kicker or perhaps any other sort of tax rebate you might have. And all of us need to consider what do we get for that expense and what could we be getting if we use that expense for something else. In order for us to exercise that discipline, we needed to do one thing that was very important, and that is we needed to know exactly what it is that we were trying to achieve. That for us meant that we were trying to build and are trying to build an institution that would provide long-term educational opportunity for the people of our community. That's the goal of every community college in our system. We're trying to be there for not just today or the next year or the next biennium, but we're trying to be there as something that the people of our communities can count on as they think about their education, as they think about their children's education. And again, that requires stability and discipline on our part. We also needed expenditure policy, and this may come as a surprise to you, but even under the hoped-for support that the state may provide us in this legislative session, we're projecting a revenue shortfall in the second year of this biennium. And so the discussion of how you use a reserve fund is a very, very real conversation for us. And in fact, in January, our board had a retreat that we specifically focused on this issue. And I would encourage the legislature to consider not just how to save this money, but to consider good, prudent policy about how you would choose to use it. We decided that there were three different things that we could use it for. One was that it could become a seed money for programmatic investment or programmatic change. In other words, we wanted to make sure that we were using the money in a way that put us in a better position to serve in the future. The second thing that we felt we could use it for was to cover a short-term revenue gap. And what we mean by that is where revenue will fall, but we can see the end of that pattern. We can see and we know that we have the revenues within our reserve in order to fill in that gap and then make it to the next funding cycle. The third one, and this was a more difficult conversation for us, but one that I, again, would encourage you to consider, is sometimes you just need money enough to buy yourself enough time to make the kinds of structural changes that you're going to need to live in that revenue environment that you forecast. And it may be 1 year, it may be one biennium, but we considered that would be an appropriate use for our resources as well. It was important to note that our board and our institution is committed to not using these merely to balance our budget on a routine basis. And I think as you talk about discipline, you certainly recognize the capacity to fall into that pattern. The state's role, a rainy day fund, in however way you achieve it, our ability to stabilize resources is limited both in scale and duration. We're small. And we can, as we try to meet the needs of the people in our community, absorb that rainy day fund at our level very, very quickly. Fluctuations in state support, as they have in the past, can easily overwhelm our capacity to adapt and to continue to provide those services. And so when faced with no other choice, what we do is we cut into our programmatic capacity. It means we reduce the educational opportunity for the people in our area. Now, sometimes that's appropriate, but frequently what we have to do is cut into programs that our people need, and in the next biennium, if perhaps we are able to recover some of that revenue, then we turn around and rebuild that program, but it costs us more. It costs us more to rebuild something that we once have. And if we can come up with ways of sustaining the program, we don't increase those operating costs of our institution. Rebuilding takes time and money. It becomes more expensive in the end than when we began. The establishment of the state rainy day fund, together with your putting together sound both savings and expenditure policies, will help us in our ability to adapt to a volatile revenue situation, will help us to be able to stabilize and provide the kind of education that we believe the people in our area and all this state deserve and want. Together, I think we all recognize that education is perhaps one of our most important services we provide, and I think by your addressing this very, very important issue, you certainly can increase our ability to provide that service locally. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hammond. Questions. What percentage of your budget comes from the state, your operational budget?
About 37%.
About 37%. Senator Monroe and Senator George.
Yeah, Mr. Heyman, you probably don't know this, but I serve on the Mount Hood Community College Board.
I do know that.
My other hat, and we've been battling these same issues of higher tuition, pricing some young people out of the possibility of an education, and perhaps condemning them to a life of minimum wage jobs and so on. So it is very, very troubling. I'm very impressed with the fact that your board has targeted a 15% reserve. Our board targets a 5% reserve and has trouble maintaining that. So, and I'm very impressed with the way your board has thoughtfully looked at how to use and not abuse that reserve fund. So keep up the good work.
Well, thank you so much. Yes, we not only price our students out of their personal opportunity, but every time we do that, we reduce the opportunity that's available to us as a state.
Mr. Lundquist.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ned Lundquist, excuse me, President of the Oregon Business Association. I'll keep this fairly brief because I did have an opportunity to testify before your committee last week, along with Harvey Matthews from the Software Association. First of all, I just want to say, I think this discussion this morning, there should be some optimism because we're all talking in the same general venue. We're a difference of opinion on maybe the details. However, I will say that I'm probably about as optimistic as Senator Devlin and Senator Starr are in regard to taking the personal kicker and trying to make any changes to that. I think we need to be very, very careful that we don't do something that precludes us from actually accomplishing good things otherwise. As you indicated, and we've talked, we did do some polling, Oregon Business Association did some polling, actually last March, and this was done, by the way, when the March forecast was put out. If you recall, the governor at that point said there was that amount of money and wondered what the business community was going to do. And so we did do the polling, and in relationship to Senator George's comment with Harvey Matthews, and he was here, I thought the one thing different about the two pollings that we've done, Software Association and ourselves, is that we have over 25, significantly in excess of 25% of our membership responded. So I think that sets the stage for it. The results very quickly. In regard to the question, should the corporate's kicker be given back this time to the corporations? And it was 88% said no to that, that we should keep the corporate kicker. And then there was also the question asked in regard to that. At that point, should it be put in a rainy day fund or a one-time investment? And actually about a third of them said a one-time investment and about two-thirds of them said a rainy day fund without any significant dialogue. You know how that's difficult to do in that situation. I thought it was interesting that the business committee saw significant potential, I guess, in putting it into one-time investments as well. And then in regard to the final question, should the corporate kicker be repealed, actually 90% said that they should be repealed, a little higher than the other. And the difference was because there were some of them that said they didn't like to go retroactive. In other words, you know, go forward, that's fine, but don't go back on it. So they saw that, the difference of that, and that's why it's a little bit different than that. That's just hard evidence that you asked me to come forward with, and that's the result.
Appreciate the Senator George.
Lynn, that 90% did include the fact that they would forego this one, the current one.
No, that was just simply on a long one-time repeal. That was so. Most of them kept the current one as well as repeal, but there's a few said no. Let's give the current one back to ourselves and but repeal.
Okay. Yeah.
So the 88% was that just no in general to the redirection of a corporate kicker. I guess you didn't ask it that way. What was the 88%?
The 88% was simply, do you give the corporate kicker back to the corporations or keep it at the state? 88% said keep it at the state.
Keep it at the state in general. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you very much. Appreciate you coming down from Clatsop, Astoria. Beautiful, growing town. Great railroad. Your little railroad.
Thank you so much for your time.
J.L. Wilson, and then Darren Bond, do you want to talk to us also just about the structure of if we're going to create a new rainy day fund? And anyone else who would like to testify, this is the last folks we have signed up, but anyone else, just let us know. Good morning, J.L.
Hey, good morning. Thank you, Chair Deckert, members of the committee. For the record, J.L. Wilson. I represent the National Federation of Independent Business here in Oregon. Our chapter currently has just over 12,100 members. I wanted to talk to you about this Friday, but we were actually did a month-long survey of our membership at large, and our survey has a distribution of about 15,000 in terms of surveying members on current topics, and we derive our positions from surveys of our membership. Our membership surveys indicated that our members were opposed to the government keeping the corporate kicker largely, and that we I contacted our independent consultant who was doing those tallies this morning. It looks like it's going to be over 70%. So I wanted to be very clear on the record that we do oppose SJR3. But what do we support? We obviously support a rainy day fund, and I want to be clear with what we do support. I think that you will find that we will be very happy to discuss and probably supportive in the need to move forward on this issue, something in the vein of a one-time diversion of the kicker combined with a general fund appropriation. And I think that that is an appropriate starting place, as AOI articulated and those that were in the panel with them. But on an ongoing basis, I wanted to make clear for the record we do oppose SJR3.
Thank you, Jim.
Yes, Senator George.
Joe, did you run the personal kicker? Because so many small businesses, that's where it's going to come back to them. I would imagine it's going to be way above the 70%.
Thank you, Chair Deckert and Senator George. There is a difference because, as you know, most S-Corps, LLCs, partnerships get their kicker back via the personal kicker. And the affinity for the personal kicker is obviously much higher.
Do you have a breakdown in terms of NFIB membership or OFIB, if that's the right, Oregon Federation, recipients of the S versus the personal versus the corporate?
Thank you, Chair Deckert and members. For the record, about 15 to 18% of our members are C-Corps. The rest are chapter S's, LLCs, yes, and like.
Thank you. Other questions for Mr. Wilson?
Just real quickly.
Yeah, please.
I guess we'll call this a follow-up. J.L., day after election, there was the governor's economic development committee was meeting down here in Room 50. I got the minutes, and it didn't reflect what I saw. Were you there at that meeting? This was day after the November election.
Thank you, Chair Deckert. Senator George, no.
Okay. In that, they were talking about, and actually Kurt Schrader was down there.
Someone has it on. So you can turn it off. Sorry, Senator George.
Okay, I'll better check, see if it's mine.
We found the culprit at his cell phone.
Two of them, huh? Okay. So in that presentation, they were talking about the long-term reform of our tax system. And what I, as I observed it, actually went down, sat in the meeting for a while, what I saw them talking about, and from the corporate standpoint, was that they were going to say, okay, we might give up the kicker here, but we want to hold that kicker kind of hostage in order to exchange a brand new tax system, which would be including a sales tax, and which would be a reduction in taxes for some of the larger companies. Now, what I see that happening is really impacting small business and really impacting lower and middle class families who are now going to have a brand new level of taxation. I perceived it as an attempt to do a tax shift from the larger corporations onto the middle and lower class, working class folks of Oregon. Have you heard anything like that as far as this whole kicker dispute being long? I'll give it up now, but I want to hold long term to get this reform, which is a tax shift away from large corporations.
Thank you, Chair Deckert, Senator George. I'll answer you the best that I can. I do agree with what was previously mentioned with AOI that we are willing to talk about the $275 million today in order to capitalize the fund, and also believe that the corporate kicker should be part of a larger discussion. Now, I personally have been quoted, and I would stand by it today, as supporting a comprehensive reform. What I do know from the membership is you can sweeten a comprehensive reform in a number of ways, including capital gains reduction, estate tax exemption increase, R&D tax credits, things that that businesses historically have liked, and you still can't get support, at least within my membership, above 45%, which is still reasonably short of the 50 plus one that you need. So I don't know. I would personally support taking a look at revamping the tax system, but I'm not sure that I could get my membership there. And ultimately, if they say no, then I have to say no.
It's unfortunate sometimes.
Very fortunate.
Thank you, JL. Darren Bond doesn't care what we do, just wants us to do it right.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that's exactly right. I'm Darren Bond, the Director of Finance for the Oregon State Treasurer. As you know, Treasurer Edwards is supportive of the idea of Rainy Day Fund, but we do have an interest in your doing it right. And I would remind the committee that the state of Oregon has an ongoing structural problem with the general fund in terms of its cash flows. We run an ongoing deficit in the general fund in good times and in bad. It just gets worse and bad. You can substantially address the cash flow deficit problems by correctly structuring the rainy day funds as you look at the legislation. And the correct way, I would argue, to do that is to establish the rainy day fund account in the general fund, allowing the cash from the general fund to be available to support your ongoing general fund budgetary deficits. What that does is it mitigates against the treasurer having to go out and borrow in the capital markets to support those general fund deficits. It'll reduce the interest cost to the state. It'll look good in the eyes of the rating agencies, and it just seems like the fiscally prudent thing to do. I think the amendments you'll see at SJR 8 are a movement in that direction, and I'd be happy to work with staff on any changes like that that might be necessary to the bills that you consider.
Yeah, no, we appreciate looking at it just from protecting the state's interest so that we don't draft something, put it, whether it's before the voters or not, that ultimately we regret because we can't change it once we put it before the voters without them acting. Questions for Mr. Bond? It's a great name for state treasurer. I never thought of that. Thank you very much. We appreciate your help in crafting this. Thank you to Joan in Legislative Council and Paul Warner, who spent the weekend drafting the amendments to SJR 3 and SJR 8 that I believe have been now put out there. So thank you, Paul, for doing that. And Joan, if you can hear us, we do appreciate your help. With that, unless someone waves and lets me know that they'd like to testify, we will close the public hearing and return to this topic probably only one more time, perhaps twice, and try to get something moving out of committee. But thank the members for their interest. We are adjourned until 8:45.